Admiral Akbar, on the bridge of the Mon Calamari cruiser Home 1, glanced with one eye at the holographic display of the near-space sector, and with the other, looked out the viewport at the array of ships Krennel had brought to the fight. Only the unconscious twitching of his barabels betrayed his surprise. He looked at the small brown Celestin serving as his communications officer.
Lieutenant Quiv, tell Emancipator to withdraw, but concentrate fire on Reckoning. Tell Peacemaker, Pride of Iatu, and Thunderchild to go after the Vic. Relay those same orders to all the corvettes. I want an orderly withdrawal. Krennel has to know we didn't expect this much strength here.
The Celestin cheebled his assent and relayed the orders. Akbar's attention shifted as Reckoning and Decisive split and began to move forward, their daggerish prows jutting toward the retreating fleet.
Weapons! Reporting positive weapon locks on Reckoning, Admiral.
Akbar nodded to his weapons officer.
Fire at will, Lieutenant Corton. Make them all count.
Corin banked his defender to starboard, then ruddered around to port for his run on the prison. He unlinked lasers, letting them fire in sequence, then swooped low and leveled out barely 5 meters above the wall he had been assigned. His finger tightened on the trigger, pulsing out verdant energy cards. He walked fire straight down the wall, igniting stormtroopers. He held his ship on target on the northeast tower and sent 2 bolts boiling into the guard post on top of it. The square little building exploded into a ball of flame, scattering men and equipment. 9 here. North wall is clear. Northeast tower is gone.
I copy, 9. Wall defenses seem to be down. 6 here. I see a lot of activity on the ground. Stormies and guards.
Corin glanced down at the prison. All 4 corner towers leaked black smoke, and the ruins of heavy blaster emplacements on the walls burned. But without troops on the ground, there was nothing to prevent the guards from entering the main building and slaughtering the prisoners. I promised Jandadonna I'd see him and the others freed. I've already failed Urlor. I'm not failing them again. 5. Set up strafing runs on the guards. Scatter them. I'm going in.
9. You can't.
Colonel, I have to. Isard's people are late or aren't coming. Someone's got to go in. Tycho remained silent for a moment.
Okay. Take Uril and Rin with you.
Corin set the defender down and switched the ship into a passworded standby mode. He wove a zigzag course to the prison wall, then waited with his back against it. Uril and Rin joined him. Corin took a peek around the corner. He drew his head back just in time as a flurry of blaster bolts chewed into the wall near him. He activated his comlink.
5!
You can come in at any time.
Copy that, 9. Keep your heads down.
Corin crouched as the defender came screaming in. Through the thick fabric of his flight suit, he could feel the heat pouring off the defender's shots. The roar of the fighters passing thundered through his chest. Keeping low, Corin looked around the corner, then waved the others on with him. Looking to the right, he saw the western yard where stormtroopers and guards had been gathering. Thick smoke drifted over it, but not so thick that he couldn't see burning bodies and figures crawling across the ground toward fallen comrades or parts of themselves that they'd lost. Screams of pain echoed within the yard, but a rising chorus of angry shouts started to eclipse them. With the shouts came a scattering of blaster bolts. Corin swept his carbine over the yard. Red bolts pierced the fog, pitching men over backward. Urul came running after him, keeping his blaster covering the eastern flank. Nirin advanced a third of the way to the main building, scything fire back and forth over the yard. Then he took up a sheltered position at the base of the steps to the main building. Corin dashed up the steps and pulled his grandfather's lightsaber from his belt. He thumbed it to life, letting its silver glow banish the shadows, then stroked it down either side of the front door. Hot metal glowing red on each side, the door fell forward. Corin darted into the smoky foyer, dropping to one knee. He tracked the blaster across the opening, then raised it as Urul came in and took up a similar position on the left side of the door. Nirin entered the building and doffed his helmet.
Where to from here?
Urul pointed at a large painted diagram of the building on the wall.
Blue level is supposed to be the isolation block. The Lusanka prisoners would be there, I would think.
Corin led the way to the stairwell.
A heavy durasteel door separated the stairwell from the cell galleries. Corin looked at Nrin and Uro.
How do we get through that?
Nrin shrugged.
Use the lightsaber to slash it open.
Corin hesitated for a moment, then bounced the heel of his hand off his helmet's forehead.
Sometimes I'm an idiot.
Corin ignited the lightsaber and turned back to his friends. This is the isolation block. There must be guards on the other side. I'll draw their fire. You break through and catch them with flanking fire. Corin brought the weapon around, stabbed it into the door's locking mechanism, then pushed through the door, triggering a burst of blaster fire. One guard took a bolt in the shoulder and tumbled back. The other guard tossed his blaster out onto the floor before raising his hands. Corin waved the man who had surrendered over to him. General Dodona, now! The guard led him into the isolation cell area and pointed at a door about a third of the way down. Corin stabbed the lightsaber into the lock mechanism, then worked the blade around in a spiral to sever the latch. The door slowly swung open, the lightsaber's light seeding the recesses with dark shadows. In the corner, on a hard pallet that served as a bunk, an old man raised his hand to shield his eyes from the glare. The white hair and beard spoke to the man's age, and the way he straightened up in the face of what seemed to be an Imperial pilot armed with a lightsaber gave testament to his inherent courage.
General Dodona?
The old man nodded.
I'm Jan Dodona.
It's been a long time, General. Corin removed his helmet and smiled.
Are you ready to go home?
The reddish glow from the fist Prince Admiral Delac Krennel made with his mechanical hand painted his face in bloody highlights. Through the viewport on Reckoning, he watched the New Republic fleet begin its withdrawal.
Yes, they're running. This is better than I could have expected. Weapons! Target the Mon Cal cruiser! Same orders to Decisive and Emperor's Wisdom.
As ordered, Prince Admiral.
A smile spread over Krennel's face as his forward gunners lashed home one with heavy turbo-laser battery fire.
Prince Admiral!
The man at the sensor station waved a hand at him.
Two of the New Republic ships are running for the ground, and the rest for space.
We can't have that!
Krennel flashed teeth in a cruel smile.
Communications! Tell Binder to power up the gravity wells. Our dying enemies can't be allowed to leave. After all, the fun has just started, hasn't it?
Recognition bloomed in the old man's eyes, bringing a smile to Corin's face.
So, you did escape the Blue Sankhya, after all. Isard tossed us a skull and said you didn't make it.
Corin nodded. I did, and even had a hand in killing her. At least, I thought we killed her. Dodona stood.
She's still been in charge of us.
That's a clone. The real thing is still out there, too. Dodona's eyes widened.
Two of her.
Yes, General. Now you know why we need you back. Corin tossed the General his blaster pistol, turned and poked his blaster carbine at the guard. Can you pop the rest of these cells?
Some.
Good. Get them open, and I'll get the rest. Corin crossed the hallway and started slashing open cells. A motley assembly of individuals slowly shambled out. Some he recognized from his time on Lusankia. 40 cells produced a total of 90 prisoners.
Is this everyone, General?
Dodona squinted, then nodded. Well, you're all free, courtesy of the New Republic. Nrin's voice rose above the husky cheering.
Corin, come here, fast.
Corin sprinted back toward the stairwell and immediately identified the reason for Nrin's yell. Both he and Uril were shooting down into the stairwell. Guards and stormtroopers were working their way up the stairs. Corin leaped back as a flurry of shots burned up at him. General Dodona studied the situation for a moment.
Only one stairwell was put in to limit access of prisoners to any escape routes.
Corin shook his head.
If you have any ideas, General, I'm open to them. After all, you saved the rebellion at Yavin. By comparison, this should be child's play.
Wedge smiled as he keyed his comlink. 9. He saved the rebellion by putting pilots in the right place at the right time. 1 flight is inbound. Stand by. A few of the men on the ground fired blasters at the defender. Wedge scattered them with an ion blast and searched for more vehicles to shoot. But something moving through the sky caught his attention. He directed his sensors at the object lifting from the city and heading out toward the prison. The sensors reported it was an Imperial assault shuttle with shields at full, all 4 laser cannons charged, and concussion missile launchers in working order, with 1 life form on board. Bringing his throttle up, he punched in a request for a comm frequency scan of the ship and switched his comm unit over to the unscrambled one it was using.
This is General Wedge Antilles of the New Republic. You would be Issani Isart.
There was momentary silence.
General Antilles, I thought you died at Disna.
I thought you died at Thyfera, so we're even.
Pure venom poured through her voice.
If you think to make this the tiebreaker, you'll lose.
Before Wedge could contradict her, fire blossomed in the shuttle's concussion missile firing tubes. A missile jetted out and began a gently curved flight toward the prison's top floor.
Corrin Horn has returned to be with those he escaped,
she hissed.
Now it's time for all of them to die.
Admiral Akbar climbed back into his command chair.
Damage control, report.
A Twi'lek female turned in his direction.
The Merlist is dead in space. Solist and Mantuin are badly damaged. Peacemaker is also dead in space.
The human at the sensor station raised a hand.
Admiral, Binder has brought its gravity well projectors up. Nothing is leaving the system.
The Mon Calamari nodded slowly.
Signal the fleet. Begin the Thrawn pincer.
In waging his war against the New Republic, Grand Admiral Thrawn had proved himself to be a masterful martial tactician. Thrawn had repeatedly used an interdictor cruiser as the equivalent of a magnet. He sent it into systems to pull a fleet from hyperspace with more precision than most navigators could plot. Akbar had learned well from him. While Akbar's main battle group had jumped directly into the Cutric system, arriving to the sun side of the planet, the second part of the task force had exited hyperspace deeper in the solar system. When the signal from Akbar reached them, the 2 Victory-class star destroyers jumped in toward Cutric and were dragged from space by Binder's presence. This brought the 2 ships out of hyperspace at Binder's aft. The second the crews oriented themselves, General Gombel Iblis issued orders to engage the enemy. They unloaded their beam weapons on the Emperor's Wisdom and launched their concussion missiles at Reckoning. They did this just after Reckoning completed its 90-degree shift to starboard, presenting its undamaged side to Home 1 and its unshielded flank to the newly arrived Salonian fire and Coruscant fire. A terrifyingly beautiful garland of explosions rippled down Reckoning's right flank and on up the command tower. One missile shot past the front of the command tower, then course-corrected and circled around to strike the forward viewport. The transparasteel resisted the impact at first, but the interior layer cracked and spalled off a hail of crystalline fragments that stormed through the bridge. They blew through Prince Admiral Krennel so fast that they had exited his back without appreciably slowing down at all. Krennel looked down to see his white uniform covered with red dots slightly lighter than the scarlet trim on his cuffs and hem. Only his right forearm sleeve remained pristine. He got as far as realizing that it had not changed color because the arm underneath was purely mechanical, before blood running from his forehead dripped down into his eyes, blinding him. Then the concussion missile detonated. Koran's comm links squawked loudly.
Concussion missile incoming, prison east.
Everyone, down! Get down!
Koran screamed at them, waving his arms at the ground.
Down! Down!
A missile slammed into the prison at the southeast corner of the fourth floor.
Corin saw a brilliant light blossom in that direction. Then the explosion's shockwave hit him, blasting him off his feet and knocking him backward into the wall. He rolled to his feet and saw Nrim getting back up too. His comlink crackled again, this time with a voice he could not instantly place.
Nrim, please advise as to your situation.
The Quarren frowned, then keyed his comlink.
Fourth floor is secure. The isolation shell shielded us from the missile blast. We're holding off the guards, but are running low on power.
I copy. We're incoming.
Corin keyed his comlink.
Who's we? And where are you incoming from? We've cleared the tower to the second floor. Team one is on the way up.
Nrim laughed aloud.
Come fast, Cap. We promise we won't shoot any Deveronians.
Cap Dendo's voice pulsed confidently through the comlink.
Sit tight. We'll have you out of there in no time.
Wedge rolled his defender to port, leveling out at the same altitude as the assault shuttle. His maneuver brought him in for a deflection shot that would hit the starboard aft section of the ship. The assault shuttle ruddered around to present its aft to him, then sideslipped to port. The pilot made the ungainly craft dance with a surprisingly light hand on the stick. Wedge punched up the shuttle's comm channel.
Nice flying, Isard.
Coming from you, that's a compliment.
I appreciate my foes and their abilities.
Wedge hesitated for a moment, then spoke with a cold confidence in his voice.
Then again, I would hope a clone would be an improvement over the original.
What?
You didn't know you were a clone. Isard wouldn't trust the dispersal of her prized captives to just anyone. She gave the job to herself. With you, she could actually be in two places at one time.
That's insane.
So was she.
Wedge triggered an iron bolt that laced aquamarine fire through the shuttle's aft shield.
You did your job, and she had you shot. She expected you to die, but you didn't, and here you are.
The shuttle sideslipped starboard.
It's a lie.
Oh, then explain why, in a similar situation on Thyfera, Isard was using her shuttle to run. And you, on the other hand, are still trying to deny us the Lusankya prisoners, as per her orders to you.
He cut off her anguished scream by switching over to One Flight's tactical channel.
Min, move into the shuttle's aft port. Gavin, set up for shots after a side slip starboard.
Wedge punched an inquiry into his tactical computer.
Take it down, now.
The other two trips moved in for the kill like Tihari on the hunt. Min's defender curled in past Wedge's fighter and snapped off a pair of ion bolts that took the shuttle in the aft. The shuttle, as predicted, side-slipped to the right. Gavin's two bolts caught the shuttle on the high dorsal stabilizer, gushing down as if a fluid. Sparks shot from shield projectors as they shorted out, and smoke began to trail from the concussion missile launches. The light in the engines died out as the ship's electrical system failed, and a ship that had once been elegant in flight became a heavy construct of metal and ceramic, suddenly unable to defy gravity. The left wing tip hit the ground first, gouging a furrow in a bridge roadway. Portions of the wing whipped through the air as it hit the durasteel supports at the bridge's edge. After 10 seconds, though, aside from the splashing of debris falling from the bridge, the lazy river had absorbed the violence of the shuttle's crash and wended on its way. Wedge glanced at his secondary screen and the answer to his computer inquiry. He punched up Isard's comm frequency again.
I know you won't reply, since you're busy playing dead. Just to let you know, there's one more way I know you're a clone. Isard tried the same trick to escape us on Thyfera. Won't work this time. It's over.
He ruddered his defender around on a course that directed it toward the base training center. When he'd asked the others in One Flight for a full scan of the shuttle, it had included data on the comm frequencies being used, including their strength and the direction from which they were coming. By having his computer compare the vectors, he triangulated Isard's location and the place from which she was directing the shuttle.
Oh, one more thing,
Wedge added.
Tell Colonel Loder he sideslips too much. That's why I got him. And you.
Wedge targeted the building and tightened his finger on the trigger. A pair of concussion missiles jetted out on azure fire, and another pair quickly followed it. All four hit it in sequence, blasting out transparasteel windows and cutting through support structures. The comm dish on the roof tipped and broke off as the upper two floors twisted, then descended into the dust cloud below them. Wedge got nothing but static on Isard's comm frequency. With a smile blossoming on his face, Wedge brought his defender around and headed it toward the prison. Isard had betrayed them, and the individual that was a slice of her tried to deny them the prize for which they had worked so hard. Both Isards had been thwarted, and no matter what else happened, that made it a very good day. Corin Horn and Jan Dodona were the last two people to come down the stairs. They came out into the sunlight, and Cap snapped to attention. He tossed a salute to Jan Dodona, which Dodona returned with crisp grace. The Deveronian extended his hand to the older man.
It is a pleasure to meet you, General. If you'll come with me, we'll get you off this rock.
Corin pointed to the sky. What happened up there?
Bel Iblis's battle group blasted Reckoning and Emperor's Wisdom. Reckoning's bridge is gone, and Krennel along with it. The crews of Binder and Decisive found themselves outgunned and decided accepting a New Republic amnesty was preferable to being reduced to scrap.
Cap shrugged easily.
I think the Pauls intend for the hegemony to enter the New Republic as a unit. They still protect their homes, and we don't have to kill them.
Win-win. Corin nodded, then waved Cap on toward the freighters. I'll catch up with you. Corin jogged over to where he'd landed his defender and smiled as Wedge's ship set down easily.
Wedge surveyed the prison and the line of men heading toward the freighters. Got them all?
As nearly as we can tell, yes. Did you get Isard's clone?
Wedge nodded. She had Colonel Laurier flying a shuttle by remote. I recognized his love of side slips. Min and Gavin brought the shuttle down. I triangulated back to the point of origin of the control and comm broadcasts, and laced it with two concussion missiles. Brought the whole training center down.
The younger man looked around, then shifted his shoulders uneasily. Cap says our fleet took Krennel down, and without their leaders, the others surrendered. Everything turned out very nicely.
It did, so why the shiver there?
We did better than expected, muddling through without Isard's help. Corin's eyes narrowed. So, where is she? And just how good a day is she having?
The daggerish hull of the Lusunkia hung in the middle of the Bilbringi shipyard like a vibroblade waiting to be plucked up and used to kill an enemy. The 8 kilometers of its length had been restored fully. With running lights burning around its edges, the prow returned to needle sharpness, the armor restored, and the ship painted an even gray tone. Isard laughed lightly. The New Republic had tried to hide Lusunkia from her. They had circulated rumors that the Superstar Destroyer had been taken apart for scrap or cannibalized to repair countless smaller ships. But she had known from the start that all such stories were deceptions. The Lusunkia was a prize they had sought to deny her. Such a ship could lay waste to fleets and project political power to the farthest reaches of the galaxy. She pressed her right hand against the transparasteel viewport on the incoming freighter Swift. Behind her, she heard the communications officer play out the watch code that allowed their freighter to approach the larger ship. Her spies in the New Republic had managed to produce it. Nothing the New Republic could do would deny her a return to her ship. Isard stared at the reflection of the bridge behind her.
Sensors, data, please.
Only the ship's essential systems are engaged with no power to weapons. I have nearly 500 mixed life form readings on board, human and other. They are largely confined near the bow, working on the restoration of areas that were severely damaged at Thyfera.
Very good. Captain? Take us in.
Isard watched, her eyes widening hungrily as the Lusankia loomed larger. With the superstar destroyer under her command, bringing the various warlords to heel would be simple. As powerful as they were, she would threaten them with destruction unless they allied themselves with her. In a very short time, she would forge a new empire and press in on the New Republic, shattering them.
I will have a realm which will make the Emperor proud.
Below her, booted feet clanked against grating as Major Telek's commandos positioned themselves to move forward and take possession of the ship. Isard started toward the docking collar, but the Swift's captain stopped her.
Colonel Vessery's squadrons have made the jump in system, and have taken up patrolling in case garrison troops from Bilbringi come up. I've told him you'll issue a recall for his fighters to dock with Lusankia when we leave the system.
Very good, Captain Winter. Contact me when you reach the bridge.
The solitary echo of her footfalls as she entered Lusankia reminded Isard of the first time she set foot on the ship. The Emperor had brought her to one of his hidden sanctums, one of the various satellite palace complexes he maintained on Imperial Center. He let her enter Lusankia all alone, be the first person to touch it, the first person to see it. If it was true that the very act of observing and experiencing something changed the thing being observed, then Isard had been the agent of change in Lusankia. And it had changed her as well. It became her source of power, hidden, lurking, much as she hid and lurked and worked to preserve the Emperor's power. She paced down a half-lit hallway. A couple of twists and turns later, she stood before a pair of red doors. She pressed her hand to the center of them, and they opened at her touch. She smiled. The ship's ability to recognize her had been hard-coded into the basic systems, and clearly the New Republic had not found all of them. Isard strode to the high-backed chair set in the middle of the forward part of the room. She unclipped her comlink from her belt and snapped it into the circular jack on one of the chair's arms.
Captain Wintle, report, if you please.
A holoprojector mounted in the floor conveyed a three-quarters-tall image of a winded Wintle to her.
Forgive me, Madam Director, but I only just got here. The atmosphere here is a bit lighter than expected. The equivalent of a mountaintop. We are working with environmental controls to change that now.
Be quick about it, Captain Wintle. I saw it out.
She plucked her comlink from the chair slot and stood, for the first time, noticing the open door to the rest of the suite. And the woman standing there with a drawn blaster. Isard thought for a second, then nodded slowly.
Yes. You are the Wasiri woman. You work for Kraken. You were married to one of my people.
Yellow Wasiri's brown eyes hardened.
Derek was never one of your people. Even at the end, he defied you. Ah, then the reports I read of his killing Kirtan Lur and your killing him were incorrect?
Isard allowed herself a smile.
I can tell you about your Derek. He broke almost immediately. We'd barely gotten him strapped into the interrogation unit when he started babbling on about all manner of things. I know more about you and the intimate details of your life with him than anyone should have been forced to listen to. Why, shut up.
What surprised Isard was not what Iella said, but how she said it. Isard couldn't believe Iella could be so calm in the face of what she had been saying.
And she will not remain so forever.
Iella shook her head.
You're not in control here, Isard. I have three people in the auxiliary bridge.
Your people on the bridge will suddenly find themselves with too little oxygen to function, and they'll drop into a deep sleep. Isard twisted the bottom of her comlink, then raised it to her lips. Her words burst out over the ship's internal communication system.
Now hear this. I am Isani Isard. To the three people in the auxiliary bridge, I offer 25 million Imperial credits each to turn the ship over to my representatives.
The holoprojector burned to life again, showing a tall, white-haired man with a mechanical left eye, standing between a dark-haired woman and a black boffin with splashes of white over her fur.
This is Booster Tarek, acting captain of the Lusankya. My loyal bridge crew and I agree. There are not enough credits in the galaxy for you to buy control of this ship from us. Yella, kill her and be done with it.
As the holograph faded, Isard looked over at Yella.
So, now you will shoot me in cold blood. Is that the plan?
Yella shook her head. Killing you would be too easy. It would deny you the time you'll spend agonizing over how we found you, how we knew you were coming for this ship. A shiver ran down Isard's spine, but she twisted a smile onto her face to hide her consternation.
Actually, I wonder how you even knew I was alive. None of Horn's messages got out.
No? And when was the last time you checked on the droids you had put into storage? Isard's head came up, and an unfamiliar sensation of dread crawled through her belly on sharp, icy claws.
So, Horn got away. Base security will be purged for that.
Isard nodded a salute to the other woman.
Next time, no such mistake will be made.
There won't be a next time.
No? The New Republic won't dare put me on trial. Too many of the people you rely upon to administer the government could be exposed. I know all their secrets, and that includes many members of your precious Senate.
Isard allowed herself to smile broadly. Yella's smile matched her own. You attempted to take control of this New Republic ship. That's piracy. And that's an offense for which you can and will be tried in a military court. No public trial. No chance to stir up hysteria. You'll just be convicted and sent to a very secure prison. I understand they're thinking of keeping you here, on Lusankya. You'll be an anonymous prisoner, cared for by droids, forgotten, locked away in the heart of the very prison you yourself created, for the rest of your natural life. The prospect stunned Isard, and in a moment's introspection was what undid her. The terror inspired by such a fate prompted her to shoot her arm forward, letting the holdout blaster slide down into her hand. It was a rash act, one only possible when the horror of life entombed outweighed the horror of death. Her shock also made her a bit slower than she should have been. Her first shot took Yella Wasiri in the left shoulder, halfway twisting her around. The blaster in Yella's right hand remained steady, however, and the shot from it caught Isard square in the stomach. Isard heard the distant clatter of her blaster on the floor as she slid down the wall. Isard looked up at Yella and opened her mouth to make yet one more taunt about Derek, but her lungs couldn't project as much as a squeak. She tried to give Yella a hard stare, the sort of hard stare that had broken Imperial nobles and invoked fear in her inferiors. But her gaze swam out of focus. Then, before she could find any other way to try to hurt another human being, the world grew dark around her. In that last moment in the sanctum the Emperor had given her, Isard realized she had failed him. With that realization held solidly in her mind, she admitted to herself that death would not be so bad after all. Standing in the midst of a party being held on the Lusankya summoned up for Corrin Horn a variety of conflicting emotions. The freed prisoners and anyone who had been in contact with them had been brought to the Superstar Destroyer and ensconced on a crew deck, being served by droids alone for 2 weeks, until New Republic medical officials completed their scans and decided they were disease-free. The release of the prisoners from isolation became a cause for celebration that drew officials and important people from all across the New Republic. At the far end of the reception room, with his back to a massive transparasteel viewport that looked out over the vast expanse of the ship's prow, General Dodona stood flanked by Admiral Akbar and Generals Belibus and Antilles. A constant stream of well-wishers moved past them, exchanging comments, glances, handshakes, and smiles. While everyone around him seemed to be very happy, something felt out of place for Corin. The last party I was at, Rulor City died, propelling all of us down the path that brought us here. Friends died, and countless people suffered. Through the milling crowd, he caught sight of Gavin Darklighter talking with Mindonos. Gavin had a smile on his face, but the way he moved and his short responses told Corin that Aesir's death still ate away at him. Gavin's a good man and doesn't deserve such pain. I'm going to make sure to talk with him, help share the burden. He's strong. He just needs someone to remind him of that fact. Wes Jensen came over and slapped Corin on the back.
We dress well for dead men, don't we?
His smile eroded slightly at the corners of his mouth.
And I thought you guys were all gone.
He shivered for a second and his voice faltered. Man, to see you again, you don't know how happy I was.
Oh, I have a clue. Corin jerked his head toward the front of the room. My ears are still ringing from the happy whoop Wedge let out. He really couldn't contain himself.
Yeah, and the little Ewok dance of joy is pretty ugly to watch, isn't it?
Wes tossed him a wink, then threaded off in Wedge's direction. Turning away from Wes's departure, Corin smiled as Iella and Mirax cut through the crowd and joined him. Mirax slipped her hand through the crook of Corin's arm.
Lusankya looks nothing like it did when we were married on it. I definitely think it's an improvement,
Corin nodded.
Kind of funny about Isard coming back here. How did you figure out she was coming back for the ship?
The two women exchanged a laugh.
Actually, it was Mirax's father who figured it out.
Iella shook her head.
Booster started from the idea that Isard wanted to re-establish the Empire, and then he started breaking it down into all the steps she'd need to take to get there. Somewhere in that list was a serious need to be able to inflict heavy damage on her enemies. From there, Booster got to the Lusankya Reborn, which he figured the New Republic was refitting because of the prices being offered for parts on the secondary commodities markets. Kraken provided us with authorization to commandeer whatever we needed, so the four of us came here and took command.
Four of you?
Mirax and Iella exchanged a quick glance.
Then Corin's wife gave his arm a squeeze.
Booster? Iella? Me? And Everpine Tech, who did some quick rewiring. We trapped Isard's people, and Iella took care of her in her own private quarters.
Corin remained silent for a moment, then nodded. Any word on what happened to Colonel Vessery and his people?
Iella shook her head. He vanished, taking his two squadrons of defenders with him. General Kraken is looking forward to his return.
She looked up toward the front of the room.
Looks like speeches are about to begin.
Corin turned to follow her gaze. Borsk Felya was moving toward a podium with Admiral Akbar and General Dodona standing near him. Other officials lined up off to the right, and in the background a disc-shaped freighter lazily cruised down the Superstar Destroyer's length.
I think we can get closer.
You two go ahead.
Iella patted Corin on the shoulder.
I'm going to slip out for a moment. Get something from my room.
Okay.
Corin turned to her.
Hurry back. We'll save a spot at our table for you for dinner.
Iella slipped into her small cabin on Lusankya and inserted her comm link into the room's comm unit holoprojector. This is Iella Wasiri, calling Starweb.
The image of the disc freighter she'd seen from the reception hung above the projector pad for a second. Then it shifted to Aesir Salar's head and shoulders.
I left a message for you and for Mirax to let you know I'm leaving.
You don't have to, Aesir. You can come back. We can explain things.
No, I'm better off dead.
But Gavin, he's... You can tell he hurts inside.
The Bothan looked away from the holocam for a moment, then sniffed and turned back.
I know, Iella. I know how much he must hurt. But he will get over it. He's a strong man. He will mourn, then recover and thrive. I know it. You have to remember what I told you from the start. when you recovered me at Disna, about why you had to tell no one I lived.
Borskvelia isn't the Emperor. Yellow opened her arms wide with exasperation. You said he told you he'd never allow the two of you to marry and adopt, and that he would make your lives miserable. That's a gross abuse of power. He can't be allowed to get away with that.
I know that, Iella, and I won't let him.
Aesir's lips peeled back in a smile that revealed sharp white teeth.
I'll go to one of our colony worlds and assume a new identity. I'll work to make changes within Bothan society that will guarantee politicians like Velia cannot ruin other lives. If I come back to life now and expose what he's done, I will take one individual down. The system still fosters that sort of power, and I need to work to change it.
Gavin would be a great help to you in all that.
I know, but it will consume my life. I won't have it consume his. He deserves better. Help him through it.
I will. We will.
Aesir nodded.
Well, I'm clear of the vector to hyperspace. Let Booster know this ship will be waiting for him at Kominar, as we discussed. Goodbye, Yella. And thank you.
Bye, Aesir. Until we meet again.
The Bothan's image blinked out as the freighter shot into hyperspace. Iella brushed a tear from her cheek, then took her comlink and headed toward the door. It slid open with a man standing there, his hand poised over the door buzzer button.
Wedge! Iella, good, I did find you.
The leader of Rogue Squadron gave her a sloppy, boyish grin. I saw Corin and Mirax. They said you'd come down here. I was wondering, I thought of this before, but never got a chance to ask you. They said they would be saving a place for you at their table, but I'm having to sit with a bunch of senators who I don't know.
And you want someone on your wing?
Yeah, someone on my wing. He extended his arm to her. Interested in the job?
Sounds like a dangerous assignment. She squinted at him for a moment. Think I can handle it?
Definitely, Iella, you're rogue material. Wedge smiled as she slipped her hand onto his arm and laid his hand over hers. We both eliminated an Isani Isard from the galaxy, and after that, together, there's nothing that can beat us.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Isard's Revenge, Book 8 of the X-Wing series, by Michael A. Stackpole. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Charles Potter, abridgment by Sharon Matlin. Isard's Revenge is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 1999, all rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 1999, Lucasfilm Limited. The book, Isard's Revenge, is available wherever Bantam books are sold.